lineouts, racks.
Halls engage.
What an amazing try.
Tries and tackles, dissected by South Africa's top rugby minds.
That is world class.
This is To The Last Drop, your weekly in-depth rugby podcast with Liam Delcombe and Brendan Nell.
This is To The Last Drop. I'm Brendan Nell.
And I'm Liam Delcombe. And this week we have a guest that in many ways needs no introduction. He's been part of the South African rugby landscape for a very long time. First as a player, back in the amateur days, and now more recently as an administrator. And he's been around those streets for quite a while. In fact, he heads up the organization and has been in that position for a while. He's also got a seat at World Rugby, at World Rugby level, as a council member. Welcome to the show, Mark Alexander. We live in interesting times, don't we?
No, yeah, true. Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me on your show.
Mark, I'm going to start with just a fun one. When I sent you the invite for this chat, I see your WhatsApp status says, please don't ask for test tickets.
I actually hate it this time because people think I've got boxes and boxes of tickets that I walk around with the handout, you know. They don't realize when I took over as president, I stopped the free ticket allocation and we pay for all our tickets. So if you ask me for a ticket, I'll have to buy it. So,
is that the question that you dread most?
I actually hate it. People get annoyed when you can't give them a ticket. You know, I have to go the same route. I have to log on to the internet. I have to pay for my login and buy the ticket. I don't get a ticket from direct from somebody. And so it's a pain in the ass. And sometimes, you know, people don't realize that they have a ticketing system. You have to log on like everybody else to their ticketing system and buy your ticket. But I have the same problem with my family members as well. So
I think we've all got that with family members when it comes to the tests. Mark, I think let's get the contentious stuff out of the way. Last week, there was a vote at your guys' council meeting about the equity deal. We've had Rion on the show as well, who's explained the equity deal from SA Rugby's side. And it was voted down by the unions. So I suppose the first question is, what now?
Okay, I think before I answer that question directly, I must take you on the journey we got to that point. And Rian joined that journey somewhere midstream. If I reflect on the journey South African rugby has undertaken over the past several years, it was marked with resilience, dedication, and unwavering commitment to restore corporate investor confidence, public trust, and support in our country. We must remember where we were. Restoring public trust and support was key to the organization. Remember in 2016, our sponsors leaving us, our team was at an all-time low, competitions weren't working out well, our governance structures never lent itself to look to be more in line with the King Report recommendations. So rebuilding public trust was of paramount importance to South Africa Rugby. And we committed as an organization to foster a more inclusive, representative organization that truly reflects the diversities of our nation. Remember, we failed the government transformation targets at the time. And there were punitive measures put on South African rugby. I think corporate South Africa and public thought we had odds with government. And a lot of things, there was a knockout effect that happened for us. We also had to address the gaps in our player development pipeline. And we had to implement a more robust succession planning. Remember, all of our players in 2016 applied their trade abroad. We had three Springbok captains retiring, and we had a major problem as far as a leadership within the team as well. So we had to rectify that problem. As a result, you know, we had to implement a lot of things. A lot of governance changes. We brought a lot of independence. We now have 50 elected members, 50 independent members on the board. We changed how we contract players and the pay pipeline. We introduced a thing called players of national interest. Before, in 2016, we had 14 players on contract. Now we have over 80 players on contract. And it's various from the guys who can just enter the team now and the players that are been identified or been Springbok selected. So we've got a strong pipeline. You can see where we are today. We have enough players that can we can fill three teams if we have to.
to play internationally. We've got three top-class teams, and that was important for us. We got some good independents on our board. Lady from the reserve was the director of the reserve bank. We got a person heading up our audit and risk from the Coronation Fund. We have a lady doing managing our social ethics and HR from the director from Telkom. We have a lady Carsten, who's a CFO. She's a CA and has an MBA from a large organization. And we have somebody from the Players Association that is represented on the board. That wasn't there before. So we changed the way because we spoke about players, but they don't have a voice in the room. So we changed the organization to get it where it was. But while doing all this, we did a turnaround strategy, but we also identified that a current revenue streams in South African rugby cannot sustain us. It just cannot sustain us. The normal broadcast and sponsorship revenue cannot sustain us. And we started investigating how can we grow market. We looked at international markets and where sport has gone internationally. And we then identified that if we want to participate at a higher level and get more revenue stream, because the current revenue, just broadcasting, we're just about break even. We just break even. And sometimes you don't break even. You know, that's the problem. We cannot sustain what we have. We must also remember that 90% of South African rugby's money comes from participating in international competitions. And I say international competitions, I talk about, first it used to be Super Rugby, now the URC, generates 25% of that revenue. 65% comes from the players. So actually we play 50% of our games outside South Africa. So every time when I said to them at the URC conference where they asked me a question about the Blue Bulls and why did the Blue Bulls set a second team to play last year, I didn't know how to answer them. I thought I'll tell them a little story about the economics of where we come from. I said to them, you know, before we even enter the field, we're at a disadvantage. Firstly, we come from a third world country. We got a fluctuating currency. We're now in London when the Sharks played in that final, and we're 34-1. And to crown it, all our top-class players, we play against them because we cannot keep them back in the country. So the current revenue streams, we cannot keep our marquee players in the country because it's just too costly. And you must allow the players to go play abroad. You know, their careers, they could be 1 year, it could be 20 years. So you must allow them to earn the maximum amount of money in the shortest possible period. So from a revenue point of view, we need to look at a point of difference. And the point of difference done internationally is around your digital platforms, your fan engagement platforms, your streaming platforms, your data mining platforms. Because the sponsors of today don't just want the name on the field and that and on their jersey. They want more. They want to be talking to the people that follows you. You know, when we played in London before we went to the World Cup, 75% of that spectators were South Africans. If you look at where we generate our money, is outside the country, not inside the country. While we got loyal supporters, we want to continue delivering to these loyal supporters week in and week out. But financially, we are not in a good place. We don't have a reserve policy. We don't have a reserve policy to make sure that when we have the next pandemic, or for instance, we play in Europe now. If that war goes over in Europe and we can't travel, then South African rugby, as you know, it is dead. Professional rugby is over. You know, when the All Blacks kicked us out of Super Rugby, that had the potential to cripple South African rugby forever. So we need to have something else to hang on to. But all these things I tell you about data, streaming, all those things, our product is more valuable for us abroad than here. But to do that, we need money. And we don't have the money. You can go to South African, there's quite a few South African investors here, and collect a handful of money. I can promise you now, if we can't turn that money into a sustainable, ongoing, organic business, then we're dead. Then 3 years down the line, I'm standing, going back to them with the begging bowl, please come and help us again.
We need to generate our own money. We need to be in other markets. And the only way we can do this,
I was going to say, if I may interrupt you, would you say, I mean, you've painted a picture there, but would you say that South African rugby has, and not just South African rugby, maybe some other federations as well, have been too over-reliant on what they get from the broadcasters? I mean, that at the moment, worldwide, is a bit of a volatile space when people don't know quite where they stand.
I can't talk about other sport, but I can talk about rugby in the world. The top 12 tier one nations in the world. And we had a conference called Sustainability in Rugby in September. All top 12, we had the break even. So we, on the chart, they had a chart, a pie chart around, which I could show you that, but it's in my board books for World Rugby. We had the break even, and the chart goes down like that. Other guys have lost money. Look at what England's lost, look. 39.5 million sterling, pounds sterling, lost. 20 at Ireland. There's not one that's sustainable. And the sad part of it, the leagues that sustain those rugby structures are not sustainable themselves. There's only two leagues that are sustainable. That is the French top 40 and the Japanese league. But all the other leagues are not sustainable. That's why you hear about merging of leagues and all that type of thing. It's because we're all trying to do exactly the same things, but we don't. And now we're talking about collaboration in world rugby stuff. Why must we all go develop our own? Why don't we do it together and pool the resources and you pay as you go and you've got it, economies of scale? But this is the problem faced worldwide. It's a worldwide problem. Firstly, our core business is the development of elite athletes, not running a big data streaming business, a big digital platform, a data mining business. You know, that's an IT. Those are outside our competency. And this whole thing about equity was to partner with people who could help us do this by giving us their partners to plug and play. I don't have a big, we'll triple the people at Platterkloof. We'll have to triple the amount of people. That's not our core business. Our core business is just rugby. And this is the reason why we did this thing. So in 2018, you know, I'm also a member of World Leaders. World Leaders is an organization that brings together all the leagues in the world, all the top, Major League, NFL, all these guys come together and we share information. And they bring all the top broadcasters there as well and all the top sponsors. And they share information on where leagues are going and what the sponsors are looking for. So in that thing, they talk about what we're talking about here. And that's when we started looking and we saw, oh, okay, here's an opportunity here. We watched what volleyball's done. Volleyball done a deal with CDC. We looked at what the PRL has done, and we looked at what the URC and the Six Nations have done. So, you know, if we take our products and we bundle it in with them and we go sell it abroad, we'll be selling our properties in pounds, and that's one way of doubling our revenue, you know, increasing our revenue over time. But again, all those things that were promised at that time to them never materialized. And rugby in the world, we're in a crossroads. And I'm not talking about world rugby, you know, but world rugby is all the nations of the world. We're at a crossroads where we have to do things differently. We have to be more innovative. We have to find ways of not depending on the visual broadcast and sponsorship to sustain the game. And also the inflating cost of travel. You know, when we started playing the URC in 2020, and where we are today, it's tripled in the flight cost. You can't even get, and I know the teams talk about business class flights to the UK. You talk about over 100,000 rand a seat. So it's expensive. And the player cost, because in France and in Japan, the player costs are slightly inflated. And so it makes rugby unsustainable in the world. And we are at that same place where we are today. So, yeah. So we started the process in 2018. I came in my, if you go look at my annual report in 2018, I mentioned the thing that we need to look at global trends. We need to look at possibly look at private equity. In 2019, we got a mandate from our members to start a process with CVC. And we started that process. And of course, 2020, the world turned its head with COVID, and things went lull. And in 2022, we received our first proposal from them. But we found the proposal that was, the proposal was not good enough for South African rugby. And we sent them back to relook at it. We received the revised offer in 2023, along with unsolicited bid from the athlete group. And we took it to our members. So here's the two offers, and the guys came online, each presented their story about their businesses. In 2023, our members then gave us a mandate to pursue the ASG group, where we got to last Friday. It took a long time because there were a lot of things that went under the bridge. We had to negotiate. You talk about tax, you talk about domicile, you talk about all those things. And we had a team of people, of lawyers and companies that worked with us to get to that point. And unfortunately, the players, the members spoke and they voted against that transaction, which takes us to where we are today. The athlete group has until the end of the month to come up with a revised offer, failing which, if they don't come to the end of their exclusivity, contractually comes to an end. And then we have to go back to our members and get a new mandate. Remember, we were mandated to negotiate. We just don't go and negotiate with people willy-nilly. It's a thing that we've taken to our members. We presented to our members, here's this group, and they give you a mandate. And we possibly have to start with a new mandate if nothing materializes. I know that there are members of our equity partners talking to the equity group, and they've been talking for a while. We're not party to that. They're talking directly with each other. But so that's where we are, and that's where we are today. They're taking back to Friday. We also have to respect when our members vote. They come with mandates from their members, and we need to respect members have spoken.
Mark, in that process, and I know it's been a long process now, you've explained how we arrived at this point, but in trying to get the deal over the line and trying to sell it to your members, is there something that you would have done differently in marketing, not marketing it, but into sort of dressing it up and sort of presenting it to the members? Here is this deal, and this is the best thing we can possibly do with South African rugby. Is there anything in that process you could have done differently? Because
you know, you learn as you go along, because, you know, we could have done things slightly differently. But of course, you know, it's easy to have somebody present something to you, then you pick out the holes and say, oh, this deal is not good enough. You know, when we opened up, and then there were other suitors who came in 2023 who said they were interested. There was a gentleman from HSBC in Dubai who was representing a South African group who wanted to come, and we said, fill in the NDAs and please sign the NDAs and we can start a process. It will open up to other organizations, but that never materialized, you know. So and a lot of noise and we got a lot of people saying a lot of things. There was a chappy that said me in a meeting. I was sitting in the meeting when I got something from a guy who talks about the listing of South African rugby and the properties and between 20% and 40%. We are not selling our crown jewels here. All we want to do, we want to get a partner that can help us do the things we need to do to make the organizations sustainable. And it's not about listings. We are public asset. South African rugby, the rugby union, is a South African. We belong to the people of South Africa. We're not a private company. And the idea for this structure is just to make sure that we can grow our business organically, and we can deliver on all the projects we have. You know, we've got a lot of projects. We talk about a lot of things. Our country, we talk about women's rugby and equal pay and all kind of things. But everything you do needs to have a business plan. It must be self-sustainable. But we can't do that now. We don't have access to funds. You know, people in South Africa hasn't found women's sport sexy enough to sponsor. You know, we talk with a lot of lip service, but when it comes to actually giving contracts, very few of them come up and want to participate in that. You know, we even went as far as I was speaking to government about going back to what happened in the 70s by getting tax breaks for people who sponsor women's sport. There were tax breaks before in the 70s for organization sport. Bring back those tax breaks. We are looking at DTI, and we've got a video to write us a proposal to change the CSI rankings. that we, if we serious that women's sport is important for our country, that we make women's sport as part of CSI and we can access that 3%, and there's trillions of rands that that listed companies puts into that that pot to access things, because we need money to deliver this thing, and we can't just do it on our own. And every year, now next year, player salaries increase.
I understand. I'm sorry to interrupt you. What I wanted to ask you now, I mean, the reality is now they voted against it. If actually don't come back by the end of the month, then the exclusivity, as you've explained, is gone. There is also the danger, I take it, that if you have to go back out to market, that you might not get a better offer, that you might get a worse offer.
Look, that is a fact. You know, I can't tell you what's out there. A lot of people have put in the paper, as I've seen, I haven't seen it myself, they put out these offers, the big offers. It's what's in the offer. And what we know, what mostly the guys understand, we can't give you the Springboks. You can't get a Springbok. We can license you the Springbok brand so we can jointly develop it and get more money. But you can't want it. I can't sell you the Springbok. You can't manage the Springboks. You can't manage the Bulls. I can't sell you the Bulls. I can't, you know, that's the reality. And that's the problem we have. When we hear about a lot of offers, and look, private equity, I think, is in a big way in lots of sport. UEFA and a whole lot of other organizations are doing the same. But I can tell you now, World Rugby is looking at it as far as competitions are concerned, getting partners to help them deliver the game. But you know, finding that right partner, you know, it's tough. And it's a lengthy process. You know, that process could run anything for over a year. It's not something that you do quickly, because there are a lot of things that has to happen before you can get to a final offer.
Are you
Mark, in the build up to the Mark, in the build up to the vote, you spoke a lot about the need to hold hands with a company or with an investor that's able to take the brand and open doors potentially and take it into new markets, and obviously, as it was explained by us at Rugby, the Americans would potentially provide you that platform. Do you now envisage a situation where you may sort of revise the ground rules or those things that you set out as absolute must-haves for an equity partner coming in? Because it may not be an international brand that comes in or an international company. Or are you still dead set that those are the things that you will need from an equity partner, even if they are a South African company?
No. Look, I think we will need those ground rules. We will need those ground rules. If you want to take our product to other markets, we're not in those markets. And to try and employ somebody to do that for us, it'll take time. And I talk about time developing a market and putting things in place. I want to plug and play with somebody else. I want to go and I don't use the name that was in the other document. I want to use a name. If I want to go with the Dodgers in America, I want to partner with Dodgers. We go to market together with the Dodgers. I need to have a relationship with these Dodgers people. You know, I don't have a working relationship. Where they did this before. If you look at what Americans are doing now, they even use Taylor Swift with sports brands. But Taylor Swift is part of one of the NFL teams. And the revenue just shot up because you're now marketing stuff together. We want to do the same thing. We wanted to be with the 49ers and to take our brand to market with the 49ers using their platforms. They've done this before. We don't have to develop a platform. We want to plug into their platform. And that was the idea at the time. That is the idea. Unfortunately, our members, four and six against, that's where we voted. And so we start again. And I think, you know, sometimes delays are not as bad as it sounds. You know, maybe it gives you time to reflect. Because I think when I reflect back on when COVID came, it was a terrible thing to happen to us. But we also identified flaws in the organizations that we participate with in their bids and in their transactions. And it helps us to put belt and brace, just not according to the same, perhaps, you know. When you do these equity things, they tell you what you must deliver and they tell you what they're going to deliver. But the only thing that goes into the contract is what you must deliver. So we found the ones that we participating internationally. We found those are some of the things that they've came short on. We now in our contracts we put those things in the contract. So yes, we'll deliver, but you must also deliver. You know, it's a two way thing. It's a marriage. When the one sings, the other claps. You know, so maybe the delays are not as bad as it seems.
Mark, at this moment, are you confident that I don't want to put a time frame on this because I know these things take time. But are you in the nearby future that you guys will get a deal and will get something across before it becomes a revenue issue in SA Rugby? Because there are obviously time limits on these things, and at some point you're going to need to start making more money.
I can't put a time on this thing because, you know, I could do so. I had so many times over the last 3 years, you know, and promises. So while all this is happening, we need to do things differently in our organization. And that's what we started doing. We started looking at other things. And unfortunately, when this happens, you know, you can't kill the stuff off that generates money. You now have to cut on the programs the way where it doesn't generate. And that's the unfortunate part of it. We don't go kill the thing that generates 80% of your revenue or 90% of your revenue and focus on something that you actually don't even break even, cross-subsidize all the time. We don't go that route. So unfortunately, we have to look at things slightly differently and be responsible, you know. And we've done so for since 2018 and when we turned the corner and we'll continue doing so. And I know that people don't like listening yet doing that, but that's unfortunately what we have to do. We don't get the big handouts from government and things like that. We have to generate our funds. We generate it ourselves.
Mark, as a rugby team, the Springboks, they're running hot at the moment. Do you also feel that there needs to be a sense of urgency to get a deal done while the Springboks are hot property? Because sport is a funny business. Things can change very quickly. I'm not suggesting for one moment the box will go south in a flash, but it probably is more prudent to get the show on the road now.
No, I agree with that. You know, we're building up momentum. I think we're in a far better place now than we were before 2019 and 2023. You know, if you just look at the player pool out there, we're really in a good place. And we need to keep that momentum going. And we will keep it going. That's why the urgency around certain things. And when we can't cut in that side, because if you cut on that side, then unfortunately you're cutting your nose. So then you cut in the lifeline. If you say that box generates 65% of our revenue, then that's the first thing you can't cut. The second thing you can't cut is the franchise, the rugby, which is the ones we play internationally, that generate 25% of your revenue. The other 10%, if we were to focus on the 10%, then we're then heading for disaster. We need to be thinking on our feet. You know, the one committee that meets more regularly than anything else in our organization is our finance committee. And thanks God for that. We've got a couple of CAs on that committee that looks at the organization from different angles. So, and not just from the blue skies as rugby people normally do.
Thanks for that, Mark, President
of
the Rugby Union. We will come back with a second installment of this chat next week. So please tune in for that.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening. For the latest insights and rugby analysis each week, plus new episode alerts, please follow or subscribe to the series. Or find all episodes at jacarandafm.com or the Jackpot app.
That is world class!